Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week you will learn the secrets to running a business without the stress. Here is your host, Angela Council.
Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week we learn the secrets to being a business and living a great life without all the stress. My name is Angela Council and I'm a stress and lifestyle mentor. And this week I'm joined by someone who really inspires me with what she's doing. Her name is Susan Bryant and she's from Seeds of Advice. And Susan's a financial planner, but Susan's not your normal run-of-the-mill financial planner. She's not boring to start with. So, but she works with multi-generational families who are in the rural industry. But the reason why I'm talking to Susan today is because what she does out in the rural communities also applies to what we're doing in everyday life. Susan loves working with the family, and she particularly likes working with women because she believes that there are conversations that need to be had, and women are the ones who are prepared to start those conversations, because quite often, particularly in rural industries, but not just there, in the city, men aren't really prepared to have these conversations because of just their makeup. So I want to welcome Susan to the podcast today. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Angela. It's great to be here.
So tell me your story. You've been a financial planner for 25 years, isn't it? So
that's right.
Tell me your story. How did you get into financial planning, and what do you do that's different to other financial planners, and how did you develop what you're doing now? Just tell us all about you. I want to know it all.
Okay. I got into financial planning because I needed some help, and I found a female financial planner 25 years ago who was very good to me, and I decided that it would be an industry that I could enjoy doing, and it would give me time to be with my two children because I was a single mum. So that's how I got into it. And I spent nearly 20 years living and working in Toowoomba, a decision I made for lifestyle reasons for my children. It's good education there. And when I was in Toowoomba, I worked with hundreds and hundreds of farming families, which I just loved. But when my daughters were grown up and had gone off to university, I thought, well, what is there left in Toowoomba for me? I should go somewhere and test my skill set. So I went to Sydney. I ended up working in private wealth management there. I was one of two private wealth managers with BT. So we just looked after ultra high net worth clients there. And some of the clients I worked with when I was in private wealth in Sydney were some of Australia's wealthiest dynastic families. And what was so fascinating to me was that every single one of them had an open conversation or dialogue going on in the family that even the smallest children were aware of. So they were really in touch with their values, what was really important to them as a family, and they were really in touch with their family culture and their decision-making processes, particularly around the money. So even from a very young age, the people in these families knew how to make decisions about money and they knew what was important. And so I thought, you know, I can take those lessons that I've learned from those families and bring them back and teach other families about them. And so that's how my practice was founded.
And isn't that interesting? Because really, I mean, I work with lots and lots of women. And one of the biggest things that I particularly work with women in business, money mindset, their beliefs around money, what we were taught about money from our families. And isn't it interesting to see that there's actually this group of people that actually probably don't have the same mindset about money as the rest of us do?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And so when I start working with clients, one of the very first things I do, and I do warn them about this because some of my farmers are a bit reluctant, but one of the first things I do is I say to them, we're going to have a very up close and personal conversation about what's important to you and what your personal values are. And often a lot of people will say to me, I can't see what's relevant about that, or it's really very simple. But the process I use starts with asking people what's important about money to them. And inevitably, the first conversation or the first bit of information I get back from people, and it's across the board, it's remarkable really, is all about safety and security. So people will say, money's important because I need to pay the bills and look after my family. But of course, we don't just stop there, and I keep digging and digging, and we keep going and going and going. And then we get to the point in the conversation where I start to see what I call the squirm, and people physically move in their chairs, and they wriggle around, and then I know we're getting to the good stuff. And they'll often say to me, "This is really hard." And I say, "Yes, it is, but it's really valuable."
It is.
And so we get things, people will say things to me like, "If I could do all those things, then I would know that I've been the person I was meant to be. Or if I could achieve all those things and see those things happen for my children, for instance, I know I would have been the best parent I could be. Or if all of those things happened, then I could die a happy person." I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. Mm. And we often get tears, and they're not always mine. So what we've got is this absolute gold about what's really, really important to people. And because I do it as a couple or even as a whole family, we've got this whole understanding between a couple about what are the real drivers. And this stuff goes right back to the imprinting years of our childhoods. You know, it's extraordinary, the things that happen to us that make us who we are. Mm-hmm. And I'll often get people say things like, "Oh, I just want to be happy." And, you know, that's all, I just want to be happy. But when we go through the whole conversation, we find out that that person may have been the only daughter in a family where a substantial farming asset was left to all her brothers, and she was left with nothing because she was the girl. And she's in, you know, might be a woman in her 70s, and she's still carrying that around inside mm-hmm. her, even unknowingly. And so that's why that conversation is so vital, because once we can identify what's really, really important to you and what is your absolutely not able to be compromised values in life, then that becomes your flag. And when you have to make difficult decisions, particularly around financial things, and we all have to do that, then you can turn to that value and say, "Is this decision going to honour that value?" And then, you know, Walt Disney's brother Roy was the business mind behind Disneyland, and Roy Disney said, "When your values are clear, your decisions are easy."
Mm, totally agree with that. And isn't, and the more I, you know, I'm doing lots of these type of interviews, and this word values comes up all the time. I use values when I work with my clients, because I think a lot of people have just kind of written off values in the past, and they just kind of play lip service to it. But really, if you want something, if you want to create the life that you're meant to be living, you really need to understand what your values are, and you need to be living your values. I think too many people are living someone else's values. They're doing what they think they should do.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's funny, from a financial point of view, how that manifests itself is that people will often say to me at the beginning, when they don't understand how we're going to be working together, they'll throw numbers at me. We want to achieve X number, or we want to achieve X return, or we want to grow the money to X. And I say, you know, that's completely pointless and meaningless unless you understand what that's going to do for you. Mm-hmm. And what that's going to do for you is going to be based on your values, because success can't be measured by a number. It just can't.
It's so refreshing to hear this, because, I mean, I'm an accountant by, you know, I am actually a qualified accountant. I just don't do it anymore. My husband's an accountant. So we're very much, you know, you're very much geared towards the dollar outcomes. And, you know, I work with financial planners and accountants and all of that. And it is all about the dollars. How many dollars do you need to retire? It's like, well, I go, but what type of life do we want to live?
Exactly.
You know, there's no point saving all this money up for the whenever if, one, you're not healthy, you're not going to make it, and you're miserable on the journey just so that you've got $3 million at the age of 80 to retire on.
That's exactly right.
I mean, I'm not saying spend all your money now, but you know, why leave it till you're 80 to enjoy it all? Why can't we enjoy it now and make really conscious decisions around our money that are based on our values right now, every single moment of the day?
Well, look, I agree with you, and that's the conversation that I have with clients, because clients will often say to me, I want to achieve X amount of money. And when we press this a little further and probe a little deeper, it may be that they've made commitments in their mind to their children. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, a good financial planner, and I mean someone who's really thoughtful and experienced and understands what the options are, can show people all sorts of different ways that they can achieve those outcomes without having to live a life of misery on the way. You know, there's so many options available to people which can honour all those commitments, both to yourself and perhaps to your children, if that's what's important to you. Other people, that's not important. There are other ways they want to help their children along the way, you know. And, I mean, the typical one I get is, oh, we want to buy our kids a house. Oh, really? You know, because I've got some innovative and more thoughtful ways that you can help your children. So a lot of the work I do, particularly with families in the bush, is when their children are young. These days most kids are going off and getting a tertiary education, so they'll be good earners when they are graduated. So I've got a model that I can work out what kind of commitment the parents might need to make for, say, 3 or 4 years into the child's superannuation fund. Mm-hmm. And they just make that commitment for 3 or 4 years and sit the child down with them while they're doing that, so the child is getting that lesson. And then the children, once they're adults and they've graduated, then pick that up and start building on it themselves. But because of the magic of compound interest, that early contribution gives the superannuation fund a huge kick along, so that the kids are getting a huge pickup in the value of those super funds by the time they're ready to retire. And that's a great gift without much commitment from the parents. And the children are getting a great lesson as well.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. It's the lesson as well, isn't it? That children are learning that this is what's happening, and it's not just, okay, well, when you're 18 here, I'll just give you some money, and they haven't worked out how it got there. Because, and I think that's what happens a lot, is that, you know, parents say, oh, well, I'll just put this money away, I'll put this money aside, and then they can have it when they're 18, 21, 30, whatever. And all of a sudden this money plonks on this child's lap or adult's lap, and they've never had money before, so they don't know how to handle it.
Well, they have no respect because they can't see, you know, the path of where that money's come from and how it works. It's just fallen out of the sky on top of them. So,
I mean, it'd be great for money to fall out of the sky, but you just look at the, you know, the number of people that win lotto and things like that. Within a few years, they've lost it all because they didn't know how to handle it. They didn't have the right mindset. That stuff, because it happens time and time again. When people don't know how to manage their money because they don't understand it. They've never really been taught how to do it.
There's some interesting stats around that. Approximately 85% of people that come across a big windfall have lost the lot within 2 years. Mm. It's frightening.
It is. Yeah, because, and that's what everyone says, oh, I'd love to win the lottery, but do you really want to win the lottery? it's great. It's a great, once again, all this stuff is all a great idea, but it's what really works and what happens in real day-to-day life. What are you doing that's your values? And, you know, if you're running a business, why are you running a business? Are you running a business to make $1 million, or are you running a business so that you've got the freedom to be with your children? You know, that's why I think it's really important. That's why I love what you do, because it is so much built around what are my values? Why am I doing this? You know, and what's it for me and what am I doing for everybody else?
Well, that's absolutely vital, and it is the place we start, because, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of families I've spoken to, it doesn't matter where they live or what they're doing. There are three common issues that come up all the time, and to put them in very succinct bullet points, they are: these families have no plan, they have no knowledge, and they have no trust. They don't know who to work with to get the outcomes that they want. And so when I apply my solution, the way that I tackle this is to start with those values and find out what's really important to them. And then we go into the bulk of the work that I do, which really has two parts. So the first part is, once we've got those values established and we understand what's really important to people, then we talk about the outcomes. So I call myself an outcomes-based financial planner. So that means that the things that I'm focusing on as a measure of success are the things that family's told me that they want to achieve. So that might be things like educating their kids or getting debt-free or being in a position where they've got certainty about what their retirement looks like. And I always get people to think about what their aged care costs are going to be, because, you know, it happens to all of us if we're lucky, but hardly anybody plans for it. And so the outcomes that the clients want are the things that I use as a measure of whether we're succeeding or not. So the way that I do that is to talk to people about their values to start with, and then once we've quantified what the outcomes are that they want, so we can put some numbers around that, then I've got a really clear idea of the sort of risk they need to be taking to get those outcomes. Every other financial planner, I know this because I used to be one of them, will ask you a series of completely inane questions about that risk profile thing and then declare that you're in a box. You're a balanced investor. You're a modest investor. You're a conservative investor. And then all your investments will be put together to meet that specific risk profile. But there's no guarantee whatsoever that the amount of risk that your investments are taking will actually deliver your outcomes.
That's right.
So and what I do is I've got a really strong modelling tool which allows me to put in everything about you, everything, and it sums it all to one number, and it says, given all this information about where you are now and what you want to do in the future and your cash flows and all of these sorts of boring stuff, then when you retire, you can spend $75,000 forever. And then we've got a conversation, because if the clients say to me, oh, wait a minute, we want to spend $100,000, then we've got a conversation. Mm-hmm. There's a gap. So what are we going to do to fill that gap? And so I can then construct a portfolio with a specific amount of risk in it, because the model will tell me, you need to take 7 or 8% risk. And by risk, I mean volatility. That's the value of your investments go up and down over time. So the bigger the swings, the higher the risk. So the model will tell me how much risk you need to be taking to deliver your outcomes. Because it's all very well saying, oh, well, I don't want to take very much risk. Well, then you may not reach your outcomes. Mm-hmm. So if you want to reach your outcomes, There's only a few questions you need to be asking yourself. You need to be saying, how do we know if we're on track to reach what we want? If not, how bad can it get, and what can we do to get back on track? Are we going to be exposed to any investment risk that could permanently compromise the achievement of our outcomes? Will we outlive our savings? How will we budget to meet our goals and objectives, those outcomes? And those are the five questions I try and address when I put the plan together. So the first part is all that planning, how are we going to actually do that. And then the second part and the last part you'll notice is what you're going to invest into. So when I'm looking at investing, I'm looking at building a portfolio that will deliver a specific amount of risk so that the clients are not overexposed to risk or underexposed and therefore not likely to reach their outcomes. My clients have got a few levers they can pull, so I have very robust, open conversations with my clients. So something might happen in their lives, you know, one of their kids goes off the rails or gets divorced and comes home, and so I'll have a client ring and say, oh, you know, we've got Anthony back and now he's living at our place, and is that going to affect our outcome? And I can just plug that into the model, and within a few minutes I can give you an answer. Mm-hmm. And there's levers you can pull. So there's a whole lot of control. So the levers are fixed. You can earn more money. You can spend less money. You can save more money. You can retire a bit later. You can live on less when you retire. Or you can take a bit more risk. You get to choose. So the outcome of my work gives people a whole lot of clarity, a whole lot of certainty, and a whole lot of control. And that makes for happy people.
And because you're working with rural families, I think that's even more important, because we were talking about this a little bit just before the call, because it's really important that we support these rural, you know, from a health point of view, we need to support the farmers. We need to support, you know, these people out who are actually our primary providers. You know, without the agricultural industry within our country, basically we've got nothing.
Oh, look, on more levels than you know. I often talk to people, you know, there's been all this hype about mining and how important it is, and every other day there's a politician on the television getting on the board and banging on about how we can't upset miners. And the mining's done great things for this country, no doubt about it. But agriculture and agribusiness, in the wider sense, contributes 12% of our gross domestic product. That's more than mining. Mm. It's a $155 billion industry. And 99, people don't realise this, but 99% of our farms are family owned. So that's just regular people like you and me with kids and school runs and the whole nine yards, just getting up every day and doing what they do and putting food on our table and putting food on our table that's safe and well regulated and good for us. Yeah, it's a phenomenal job that they do, absolutely phenomenal.
And our environment doesn't help them out a lot, does it? Because we have a lot of drought in this country.
Oh, look, it's some areas at the moment as we speak, places up around Longreach and Winton, it's just wicked. 4 years of drought, like yeah. Not a drop of rain. And what happens when that happens is that you can't afford to support and feed your stock. And so you might have spent 20 years building up a bloodline with those stock. You've got to sell them all. Got to sell them all. Just destock until the rain comes.
And see, that must be heartbreaking, particularly for the farmers. And then they've got the other side where they want to provide for their families. So what you do, you know, kind of, it's offering more than just, oh, there's a bit of advice. You're offering them support.
Oh, well, I like to think so. I hope I do, because often the conversations where I'm brought in is these difficult times have forced a family to think about how they're operating and what they're doing, because, you know, businesses have to be sustainable no matter what kind of business you're in. And if you've got three generations living on one or two places and drought has hit and gone on for years, then it often prompts these conversations to start. And so they think about, well, maybe it's time for mum and dad to move off. And, of course, that's always difficult because that may have not been in mum and dad's plan. You know? So that's a tricky conversation, very tricky. But we do lots of those, and there's always a solution. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, mm-hmm. and there's always a solution. So we always can come up with something. And you know, that may require some compromise on everybody's part. But at the end of the day, it's about sustainability. And of course, in the bush, your business and your family is inextricably linked. So you can't just say, well, look, we'll just talk about the business, because the business is their life. It's their way of life. It's their heartbeat. It's their reason for being. So it's an extremely difficult conversation to have. But if we can keep the business sustainable, we can keep the family sustainable. If we can keep the family sustainable, that helps to keep the business sustainable. And so sustainability is key, because particularly in farming, you know, it's – the best outcomes happen often when you've got multi-generational businesses. So ideas have got a long time to evolve and develop and to see the payoff. So if you can keep the family sustainable and keep the family business sustainable, all those great ideas get time to be sown and to come to maturity and for them to see the results. So that's a great thing to see. That's a great thing.
And it's so important for us city folk to actually recognise what is actually happening, because we need to be aware of what's happening in the bush. We need to be aware of what's going on for the farmers. And, you know, because I buy all my meat from a free-range butcher. I know the farmer, I know the butcher, because it's all family, same thing, you know, it's multi-generational. And I pay more for that, but I'm happy to pay more for that because I know exactly where the money's going. I know how they look after their cattle. I also know that they're doing it really, really hard, that, you know, they have been in drought, and every time there's a little bit of rain, the ground is so hard that the water doesn't...
It just runs off.
It just runs off, doesn't soak in. And they got some, during this winter, they got some snow, and that just soaked into the ground, because at least then they could get a little bit of feed up. And to me, I think for us people who are living in the city, we need to really be aware of what's going on, because I know so many people just go to the supermarket and say, oh, the price of meat's going up. But there's a reason. It's that the farmers aren't doing this on purpose. They have to survive.
Well, don't forget too that most of the produce that you buy, even in the big supermarkets, is grown by family farms. You know, they're family farms that have got contracts with the big supermarkets. So there's nothing wrong in that if your price point is such that the supermarket is the best place for you to do your shopping. These things are not produced in factories. It's a family farmer that's growing the carrots at, you know, I won't mention the big supermarket names, but all of those people have got contracts with the big supermarkets as well. So, you know, and all of them are doing their best. Despite difficulties, I mean, you know, we're talking about NBN and the internet, and you know, you and I had a little internet hiccup at the beginning of this. Some of the people that I know who live in the bush have got horrendous connectivity problems. And there's stories about young mums with, you know, they're schooling their kids on School of the Air because it's the only option they have, and they're having to put three kids in the back of the four-wheel drive and go and drive miles to sit on top of a ridge with their laptops in the car because it's the only way they can get a connection. I mean, those are the things that you don't see and hear about in the city. Imagine doing that and trying to run a business, and I mean, it just beggars belief, you know, that in this day and age they're working under those conditions. So there's a lot going on there that we don't see in the city, but I know that these families are doing their best and working their hardest to deliver a really high-quality product, and I'm really privileged to be a part of that, and that's the part, I guess, that I love the most about what I do.
I hear the passion that comes through, and that's what I love when I'm speaking to women who are like you, is just the passion. You can hear it. It just comes through in your voice, and I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic. It's really important that everyone who's listening is out there buying Australian-made produce. Absolutely. We shouldn't be doing... I cannot understand. I go down to the supermarket and there's grapes everywhere and they all come from the USA. I'm thinking, why would I be eating grapes from the USA when, honestly, I live in Sydney. There's grapes grown not, you know, a few hundred kilometres up the road. I just need to wait for grape season to come. They'll be here.
It's seasonal eating, isn't it?
Seasonal. And that's what we should be doing, because we've got so used to having food available 12 months of the year.
Yep.
From a health point of view, that's not good, because our bodies need certain chemicals, certain phytochemicals at different times of the year. And if you're not eating seasonally, it's actually putting a stress on your body. So that's where I come in, is like talking to people about eating local, eating seasonal. We call it slow eating, seasonal, low, organic and whole. And not everyone can afford organic, but that's okay. But, you know, at least if you can get your seasonal, your local and your whole foods in there, Your body's getting what it needs, as opposed to getting stuff from around the world. And then on the other side of that, we're supporting our farmers, which is what you're doing. And you're helping these farmers, say, as you said, stay sustainable.
Well, look, that is my focus. But I would say to you that no matter who you are or where you live, the sorts of things that I've been talking about and the approach that I take, anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. And it's actually a good way. If you're listening and you've got a family, or even if you're just a single woman trying to get control of your life financially, these are things that you can apply to yourself. Find a financial planner that's willing to have those values-based conversations. There's quite a few of them around. And that's a good place to start, so that you know that what you're aiming for is going to be something that sits well with you. And that's a good measure of success. And then, although I'm an outcomes-based financial planner, there are some of those around as well. So you could see if you could find somebody that will focus on that for you rather than just focus on a number. The last part about managing the risk in your portfolio, there are very, very few risk-targeted financial advisors like I am. But now that you've heard about it, you can do a little bit of research on it and either work with your existing financial planner or find a financial planner that's willing to talk to you a little bit more about how they manage the risk in your portfolio, so that you know that you've got enough risk to get the outcomes you want, but not too much, because if you have too much risk, you'll blow up. And not too little, because you have too little risk, you won't achieve the outcomes that you want. So there's some good takeaway messages from this, even though, like I said, I specialise in working with rural families, but the lessons can be carried across to anybody.
So we don't know who's listening to this podcast. So how, if we've got rural families or people that know rural families that need a really great financial advisor, where can they find more out about you?
There's a couple of places. So I've got a Facebook page, which is just the name of my business, which is Seeds of Advice. And I've got a website, and the URL for that is www.seedsofadvice.com. So that's all one word. Mm-hmm. And I've also got a profile on LinkedIn, so you can just search me under my name, which is Susan Bryant. And you can find me on LinkedIn. So there's three places you can go and find me. And there may be some articles and things that I've done also.
So I'll also put all these links up on the web page when the podcast goes live. And there's two little questions I'm going to ask you. Number one, you've got a book in the pipeline, haven't you?
I have.
When's that due for release?
Way in the pipeline. Yeah, no, early next year.
Okay, so we're going to come back and we're going to check on that one.
Yep.
And tell us, what's the book all about?
The book is all about what I do and how I do it. So it's mainly aimed at farming families. So it's a sort of book, because these conversations are hard to have, it's the sort of book that you could pick up and take home and read little bits out of it. And you might even find that at the kitchen table or in bed, you may have a captive audience that you could read the bits out to. And it's got lots of information on how to start these conversations and lots of information about the things that you need to be thinking about if you are a farming couple that is thinking about retiring or moving off the farm, or if you are a farming couple whose parents or parents-in-law are thinking about retiring or moving off the family farm. So it's, there's something in there for everyone. So, I talk a lot to mills and dills. So mills and dills are mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. Because, you know, there's an old saying in the bush that the most feared animal on the farm is the daughter-in-law. And I would disagree with that. But, you know, everybody's got different agendas. You know, everybody's got different things that they're aiming at in life. And so the book addresses both sides of that. So every generation, there's something in there for every generation to think about, and some worksheets and some really vital resources and things like that. So,
okay, so now we're waiting for it, so you've got a little bit more incentive to get that finished.
I have.
Okay.
I'm sitting over the Christmas period.
Now, our little fun question we like to have at the end of every podcast.
Bring it on.
Who is your celebrity crush and why?
Oh, my goodness. A celebrity crush.
Come on, there's someone deep down there.
Do you know, I think it's Stephen Fry.
Oh, okay, that's very intellectual.
I so admire his mind. I love his quick wit. I love his quirky way of seeing the world. And I have so much respect for his courage in coming out as a gay man and being prepared to have a public discourse about that.
Wow, very good.
I may regret that answer.
No, you won't. So I want to thank Susan for joining me today, and it was absolutely fantastic to really learn more about values in your financial planning and even just a little bit more about how the rural industry works, because I think we need to really open our eyes up to that. And as Susan says, the stuff she talks about, it can apply to anybody, anyone, any family, any woman in business. These are the things that you should be thinking about. So I really want to thank you, Susan, for joining us. And anyone who's got any comments or questions, please leave your comments on the webpage underneath this post. And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. And if you love this episode, pop over to the website, let me know, or pop over to iTunes and subscribe to iTunes. And while you're over there, leave me a 5-star rating, because I absolutely love those 5-star ratings. And until next week, when I'm going to be back to talk more health, wealth, and mindset in business, I'll see you then. Infinite love and gratitude. Bye for now. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. I hope you enjoyed it. Why not pop over to my website, angelacouncil.com, and do your stress quiz to find out how stress is affecting you in your life. Looking forward to speaking to you again next week. Bye for now.